The reading can be found on page 697, that's 697 of the Church Bibles, and it's Isaiah chapter 11, beginning at the first verse. And it's Isaiah's great vision of the peace and justice that Christ will bring. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together. And a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together. And the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den. And the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. In that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him. And his resting place will be glorious. This is the word of the Lord.
Just turn to your neighbor and say, how much do waters fill the sea? Quite a tricky one, isn't it? As the waters cover the sea. I mean, I've never found any sea. I was brought up on Guernsey, there was lots of sea. I never found any of the sea that didn't have water in it. It's an amazing picture, isn't it, of the glory of God filling everything in every possible way. Is it a dream? Is it a possibility? It's a vision, isn't it? That's what Isaiah had. In the Old Testament, one of the Hebrew words for a prophet is a seer. It's someone literally who sees something. I don't know if you see things. How many of you often dream dreams? I mean, how many of you feel they're significant? Slightly fewer. I just never remember them. I sleep well, but I don't. I mean, now I dream. Apparently, we all do. But seeing something that other people don't always see. Sometimes the prophets are foretelling, so they're predicting the future, they're saying what's going to happen, but more often they're forthtelling. And that's about saying, this is how God sees it. It's not really about the distant future usually, it's about the present, the here and now. You think this, but God sees it differently. Now, I think you all see things differently. You'll probably have seen this picture before. How old is that woman? It depends how you see it. So, how many of you see that as her mouth? How else could it be seen? A sort of neck choker. Okay, so is that her nose or her chin? So for some of you, you've seen it as an older woman who's frankly a bit of a hag. I know we're in church, but it's true. That's what. Whereas for others, she's sort of looking in that direction. You can't really see her face. You can just see a bit of her eyelash. And she's really very pretty. We see the same thing, but we see things differently. Now, what do you see when you see this? What is it? How many of you saw it as Pac-Man? That was your first. So it's a generational thing. First and brilliant video game was Pac-Man. Now, if someone had never seen a Christmas tree, they would never say Christmas tree. But because most of you in our culture have seen them, you think, oh, I can see what that is. But if you think about it, you're seeing something that isn't there. You're seeing something that's actually invisible. And the job of a prophet is to see what others can't see yet. And so as we've been going through the Old Testament with these brilliant pictures going around the church, today we're thinking about Isaiah. We're going to have 2 weeks thinking about the prophet Isaiah. And it's a great name, isn't it? One Isaiah than the other. Ugh, old gag. But the first verse begins, the vision concerning Judah and Jerusalem. So it's a book of words, but he's recording things that he's seen, that not others haven't seen, through the reign of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, four kings that are going to reign. So it's a long period of time. He sees things and then he describes them. They're actually quite difficult things. There's judgment on the northern 10 tribes, Israel as it's called for short, but also on Judah and Levi, the separated kingdoms, and Moab and other nations around there. So chapters 1 to 39 this week. It's a heavy prophecy. What's the job of a prophet? It's not really to teach, because that's the job of the priests. As the last book in the Old Testament, Malachi, not Malachi, it's Malachi, says the lips of a priest should preserve knowledge, because he's the messenger. Malachi is the Hebrew word for messenger of the Lord Almighty. And people seek instruction. So the priests had a job of training the people. They had the book of the law, what God had said through Moses. They were meant to teach and train. But actually, sometimes the priests themselves misunderstood it, or were wrong, or were themselves completely lost. And it's at those sort of moments that God raises up prophets. Okay, how many of you have ever chopped down a tree? Okay, there's a few female hands, more male perhaps. In my last parish, we were blessed with a very big garden, and I chopped down about 5 trees over the years. None of them had protection orders, be relaxed over it. But I don't know, it brings out the hunter-gatherer in me. And I just think, this is me and my sons, we will chop today. It's a great fun thing. You can see what you've done. That's what's difficult in Christian ministry. It's very difficult to get to the end of a day and say, yes, people now love each other enough. My job here is done. Whereas chopping a tree, yeah, that's done. It's really nice with the timeline. You can see the job is now complete. But there are 3 different types of chopping. There's a pollard. A pollard is when you take the head off, and on some trees that does a very good thing. It sprouts out with lots of branches. They do it a lot around here. Have you seen that? About around the riversides and on willows especially. You take the top off as a pollard, and loads of new little branches come out. And then if it's willow, you can make them into a basket, if you're so inclined. I couldn't do it, actually, but in theory, you could. So it wasn't to kill it, it was to make it grow differently. And then there's a coppice, which is an area of woodland where it's sort of being a harvest of wood. It's not that you want to kill it, you're going to get a harvest, a crop of wood from it. And then there's chopping. My favorite type, chop. And then it's dead. Isaiah is a man who's seen a tree chopped down. And this is a deadly wound. This is the last type. It's not a pollard or a coppice. It's just a dead stump. And it will be just left to rot. The tree he's looking at is the family tree of King David. And it's just the end of that tree. David was the son of Jesse. And David's son was Solomon. And under Solomon, the tree was like a cedar of Lebanon. It was so beautiful and verdant. But actually, it starts dying. And if you read 2 Kings 25, which is not for the faint-hearted, it's the end of the chopping. Zedekiah, the last king in the line, his sons are murdered in front of him, and then his eyes are gouged out, and he's taken away as an exile. That's a big chop. It's the end of the tree. It's the death of it. And Isaiah has seen that. And yet he then also has this extraordinary vision. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. That's David's dad. And from his roots, unexpectedly, a branch will bear fruit. I mean, what's the chances of it? Nil, he had thought. A branch. And what will this king be like? Because that's what he is, a Messiah king. He's just like the menorah. In the temple, they had the light always burning. Often in Israel, you'll see nine things, the Hanukkah light, which has a ninth of the servant light from which you light the eight. But the menorah is seven. It's connecting with the seven spirits of God. So God was pictured as having seven spirits, seven attributes. And in Isaiah's vision, this Messiah king grows up, and all that is in God is in him. And so he says, a shoot will come out of the stump, and the Spirit of the Lord, it's all because of the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him in full measure. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, of counsel and of might, of knowledge and the fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. So he's wise and discerning. He makes really good decisions. He has counsel. That means he's able to take counsel and have good strategies, but he's also strong, might, strength, knowledge. He knows God. And unlike the other kings, it's the fear of the Lord. He's actually humble. And the seventh attribute, he will delight in the fear of the Lord. And that word delight literally means smells good. Last Sunday, I was blessed. We had lamb with rosemary and garlic pressed in. And I remember opening the front door and I went, oh. I mean, I enjoyed church, but getting home was also... And it's like it says in the Old Testament, and there was a pleasing aroma to the Lord. It's very anthropomorphic. It gives God human qualities. And sometimes something, there's an offering, and it's like God says, oh, I love that. So just turn to your neighbor and say to them, what is your... I mean, maybe baking bread? What's for you is like... That smells good. Just turn to your neighbor. What's a great smell that makes you smile? Or just think it if you don't want to talk. Okay, there's too much laughing now. Let's move on. So there are some things that you just... The smell... makes you smile. And what it's saying is, this Messiah king, the one who is coming, who's from the roots, he's actually before David, but he's also after, he will delight. Everything to do with God, he's just thrilled. He loves it. Now, if you have been confirmed in the Church of England, confirmation the bishop, she comes, or he comes, and lays hands upon your head and confirm you. If you ask who does a confirmation, the bishop might say, oh, I'm doing it. Or the candidate might say, oh, I'm confirming my faith. These are both wrong answers. Don't tell the bishop, they might be upset. The prayer of confirmation is, confirm, O Lord, your servant, Jean, Susan, whatever it is, with your Holy Spirit. Confirm means strengthen. Strengthen. And those words, verses 2 and 3 of Isaiah 11, were prayed by the bishop over you. They stretched out both their hands and prayed, everything that is in God and in his Messiah, Jesus, may it be in you, that all the attributes of God will be released in full measure over your life, that you'll find delight in all the things of God. Now, we believe this was fulfilled even though that was said 600 years before Jesus was born, but he was still around because he's from everlasting to everlasting. And it was fulfilled in his life and ministry. And when we say yes to Jesus, then he sends his own Spirit, the Spirit of God, the Spirit of Jesus, into our lives to bring out those fruits. And that happened on the day of Pentecost. Pentecost means 50. 50 days after Easter, the Spirit was poured out, 9 o'clock in the morning. That's an early time, isn't it? They've been up all night praying, seeking God's face, and the Spirit is poured out. I just want to close really with these words from John 7. I love these. The Feast of Tabernacles was a ceremony in the temple where water was poured out in great big stone jars. It's water everywhere. And in Jewish festivals, the last day is always the best day. It's not that people are sort of beginning to go home. They have 8 days, so you finish on the same day as the first day. And on the last and greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, if anyone is thirsty, let them come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them. By this, he meant the Spirit. So this is added by John to help us understand what Jesus is getting at. By this, he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. And I just love the verbs. If anyone is thirsty, if you thirst. I wonder if you are thirsty. When I was 15, I was very ill. I very nearly died. I was in hospital for quite a long time. I've still got the war wounds, which I showed to very close friends. But I wasn't allowed to drink for a week. And I just remember I was allowed to suck on a piece of ice. I was so thirsty, and I actually started hallucinating that I'd have a cold Fanta. I remember coming out of my hallucination and realizing it was not real. And I cried. I was so thirsty. I wonder if you have ever really been thirsty. In Psalm 42, it says, as a deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. The biggest church in many churches, biggest problem in most churches, all many Christians, is they simply aren't thirsty. If you're offered a drink and you say, I'm good, thanks. No, I'm fine. Why would you possibly want more? But I know there are people here today, I'm quite sure, and you know actually you are thirsty. You need more of God. So a reality check, are you thirsty? Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Those, only they are satisfied. So it's offered to everyone, but not everyone thirsts. If you are thirsty, come to me, says Jesus. Only he can baptize people, because it's his Spirit. Come to me and drink. That's the other problem for many Christians. Believe the theology, but just don't know how to drink. Just a little bit about our family, our daughter Rachel. has Down syndrome and other learning difficulties. And part of her autism is that she can have food or drink in front of her, but she's sort of in a locked-in place and just won't reach out. And it's really frustrating because I know she's thirsty, but she just won't drink. And so eventually I realise what's going on, and I'll give her, come on, Rachel, hold it up. And she sort of gulps it back in one and then looks at me like, how long was I going to wait then? Really indignantly. I think, well, it was there all the time. You just didn't drink it. I wonder if that describes your spiritual state. Actually, you know it all, but when are you actually drinking? And do you know how to drink? How do you drink the Spirit? How do you refill on God? And I think we have to learn it. And we're all different, so it's not being like me or Rory, or it's being like you. For me, I tend to think of like Psalm 100, I'll enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. So it's a private thing. It's not what we're doing together. It's what we do by ourselves. I open my mouth and praise Jesus. I say, thank you. I remember things that he's done for me. I just speak it out. And I perhaps sing a song, or I sing in tongues, or I just speak out blessings of what God's done for me, just for him. And then something starts bubbling up, a river of life. I thought, oh yes, it's there. Just whilst we were worshipping earlier, I thought, I wonder if there's anyone who's prayed long and hard to receive the gift of tongues years ago, but you actually don't pray in tongues very much now. It's sort of, well, can't quite be bothered. I know so many people who prayed to be able to pray in tongues, and then God gave the gift, and they just gave up, really. Don't know why. And I found if I can't be bothered to pray in English, I probably can't be bothered to pray in tongues either. You know, God doesn't take you over. It's like striking a match. You have to put some energy in, and then God does something. Wonder if you just need to give some time to more drinking. Let the reader understand. You need to drink more to make time to be filled again. And it's not that that's the best or the only gift. Find the way that you are filled again. And believe. If you've asked Jesus to fill you with his Spirit, you don't have to become more like me or like anyone else. You become more fully the human being God made you to be. But the upgrade version, because you're full of the Spirit of Jesus. Life in all its fullness. And so I just wanted to give a bit of space for saying that on Pentecost, all that God did and prophesied through Isaiah has been fulfilled in the person of Jesus. Are you thirsty, really? There's Rory watching, looking at his watch. And, you know, we do that. I think, well, God, I do want you to work, but could you do it in the next... I've done that so often. Do you want more of God? If you're thirsty, then come to Jesus. We use the songs or the prayers to respond to Jesus. And then we drink, whatever that means to you, for you to do. So can I ask then, let's see where this goes. But respond to Jesus, whatever he's calling you into.